Dr. Garcha, there seems to be some confusion out there about when women should start getting mammograms. Some doctors are saying 40, some are saying 45. What are the current recommendations, and what's the, in your opinion, the right answer?
No, that's a great question. And really the right answer, it's not a same age for every patient. Every woman has different risk factors, some higher than others. So over time and in the future, I think we're probably going to change that. But right now, the answer is 40.
40, okay.
And really, knowing when to start getting screened is a really important part of surviving breast cancer if a patient ends up getting it.
So if a patient or has a family history of breast cancer, they would start at 40, or if someone doesn't have a family history of breast cancer, they would start later, or you want them to start at 40 as well?
I think 40 is probably the latest for anybody.
Okay.
For somebody that has a lot of risk factors or is higher risk for getting breast cancer, earlier would be an option. There's also other modalities other than mammogram that we use for our younger patients as well.
Okay. When should a female start self-breast examinations?
Really, starting with puberty. I mean, as soon as a woman's got breasts, self-breast examinations are a great idea, especially before the age of screening. Once women start getting mammograms and are adequately screened, self-breast exam starts becoming less valuable. But really, any woman that's got breasts should do a self-breast exam.
Okay. A lot of women hear the term, you have dense breast tissue, or on their mammogram report, and aren't sure what to make of that. What does dense breast density actually mean, and does it change what type of screening a woman should have?
Yeah, it definitely does. Mammography is the absolute gold standard for early detection. No other modality has really ever been found to be better than that, or exceed that as far as sensitivity and specificity. However, mammography does have some limitations, one of which is dense breasts. In order for a mammogram to penetrate and find a cancer at a small size, density can interfere with that.
Okay, what does it mean? What does a dense breast mean?
Sure. So breast tissue is made out of really two things. There's the tissue of the breast itself, and then there's fat, which is what kind of holds everything together.
Mm-hmm.
So the tissue that makes the breast are the cells that make milk and the cells that line the ducts that transport it. And then the tissue around it is fat. So the ratio of fat in the breast to the breast tissue itself is what makes breast dense.
Okay.
And over time, women's breasts get less dense.
Oh, okay. It's
a natural process of aging, especially after menopause when there's less estrogen. But a young woman is going to have very dense breasts. Part of the reason we don't do mammography until 40, because most women under the age of 40, their breasts are so dense that the benefits you get from early detection may not balance well with the excess radiation that they get.
Folks, we are speaking with Dr. Garcha, and he's a specialist in surgery for breast cancer and screening. And you can give us a call at 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. If you have a question about breast cancer screening, if you've had one that came back a little abnormal, if you have had breast cancer and you have questions about your journey that you're on, give us a call at 404-872-0750. Now, women who have had breast augmentation, then they're going to get a mammogram. How does that affect that?
It affects it a little bit, but today in a mammography unit or radiology unit that does a lot of mammograms, it can be done very safely.
Okay.
The issue is the implant obscuring part of the breast, and could a mammogram miss a cancer that would be hidden behind an implant, say. However, implants have been around for a really long time, and the techniques of getting a mammogram and our mammogram techs have gotten really good at it. So the way they do it is called an implant displaced view, where they literally push the implant over temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't damage the implant, but move it over enough to where they can view the breast.
All right. Good news. When a mammogram comes back that something needs to be followed up, the next steps aren't always very clear. Does Northside have a process in place to make sure women are guided through what happens after an abnormal result? Because that's really scary for women.
No, it can be pretty scary. And I would say it's a combination of scary and sometimes annoying. We're very careful today in the United States, and especially our hospital, we don't want to miss anything.
Mm-hmm.
So if a screening mammogram is the least bit abnormal, it's very common for women to get called back. Oftentimes it's an additional view, and just by getting a different view or maybe an ultrasound, it can be cleared, and then they can go on and go back to yearly screening mammogram. But it does happen a lot. And a lot of women tend to get a little frustrated of every single time they get a mammogram, they got to come back.
Okay.
Which is not great, because that discourages women from getting mammography. But
okay.
We also want to be careful. So to answer your question, the process is such that when a patient gets a mammogram result, whether it's on the portal or from their doctor or in the mail, it should have a phone number that says, this is who you should call. At Northside Hospital, we track those. So if we send somebody a letter and we don't hear from them, we check it again. We use certified mail. Everybody gets a lot of emails and a lot of junk mail, so people tend to throw it away.
Right.
So really, to be a quality breast cancer screening program, those are really important parts, is make sure patients get the appropriate follow-up and the communication.
That's tremendous. That's customer service right there, Dr. Garcha. Let's go to the phone lines and speak with Catherine. Catherine in Bogart, you're on WSB. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
How can we help you today?
Well, I had breast cancer at 71. I'm now 88. And I started getting pain under the arm area where it's the right breast, where the scar tissue is. And I had very intense, screening on mammograms and ultrasound last November, and they say it's my scar tissue that's causing the pain, but sometimes it's quite extreme, and I'm wondering if there's something that can be done about it. They never mentioned anything.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm glad you asked it. You know, the treatment of breast cancer has longstanding side effects for women. And that's an important part of your breast cancer treatment team, is not only to cure you of the cancer, but to get you back to your normal life. Having pain and scar tissue can be very annoying and very scary. Number one, you want to make sure the cancer's not back. But number two, you'd like for that pain to go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So first of all, just for the other listeners, just to let everybody know, pain is a very, very uncommon sign of breast cancer. I don't want to say it's zero, but it's pretty close. So that's not to say your pain should not be addressed, but I'm not surprised by the fact that they did not find a recurrence of your cancer. As far as what causes pain after breast cancer treatment, or let's call it breast cancer surgery, the most common things are scar tissue, like you said. The other thing is tightness in the muscle. So for patients that have pain after their breast cancer surgery, as long as there's nothing cancerous to explain it, physical therapy is a really important part of it. And our physical therapists here in the city, a lot of them specialize in post-breast cancer treatment physical therapy, and it's a combination of stretching, sometimes massage, even dry needling. So if you could even go to your primary care doctor, you don't have to go to your breast cancer team, to see if you get a referral to a good physical therapy place, and specifically one that specializes or at least has experience in post breast surgery. Did you have a lumpectomy or a mastectomy?
Lumpectomy.
Yeah. So the other thing with a lumpectomy is most lumpectomy patients get some radiation, and radiation can also affect...
36 of them.
Yeah.
Bless you.
The last eight, my breast was like hamburger.
Yeah, they probably gave you a bit of a boost at the end. Yeah, I'm sorry you had to go through all that. Our radiation treatment is getting better and more targeted, but what you describe is not uncommon at all. So if you could find a way to get a referral to a good physical therapist, I think it would help you a lot.
All right, Miss Catherine.
That I will do. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and have a great day, and thanks for calling Doctor's On Call. All right, bye-bye. Hit the wrong button, turn my mic off. All right, there you go. You're listening to Doctor's Own Call. We have Iqbal Garcha as our guest on the show. You're listening to Doctor's Own Call, presented by Northside Hospital, only on 95.5 WSB. And welcome back to Doctor's Own Call on 95.5 WSB. And we are taking your calls at 404-872-0750. I have guest in the studio, Iqbal Garcha. He is a surgical specialist of Atlanta, and that's part of Northside Hospital. He is a breast surgery specialist treating both benign and malignant diseases, as well as endocrine surgery, minimally invasive laparoscopic and robotic procedures on the breast. And we're taking your calls at 404-872-0750. So, Dr. Garcha, we had Ken from Carrollton that couldn't hold on, but his question for you was men's breast cancer. Now, that seems pretty rare.
That is correct. It's out of 100 breast cancer cases, only one is in a male.
Wow. He said he's curious about the signs, the symptoms, and the treatment options if needed.
Yeah. So first of all, from a screening standpoint, there is no recommended screening exam, such as mammography that we do for women, partly because it's more rare.
Sure.
So the radiation effect probably doesn't justify it. But also the male breast is so much smaller than the female breast that finding a breast cancer on physical exam is probably just as accurate or as early as finding it on a mammogram. So breast cancers in males are generally found as a lump or a bump.
Okay.
And before mammography got great, most women's breast cancers were found as a lump. But now that we're catching them much earlier and women are screened better, very rare for a woman to get diagnosed with a breast cancer by feeling it. But that's the main way that men get diagnosed.
Through their annual physical exam through their primary care physician.
That is correct. We don't push monthly self-breast exam for men for breast cancer just because it's so rare.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, a physical exam should be done as part of your annual health check, and that would be the time to that you would find it.
And since you told our last caller, Catherine, that breast cancer typically doesn't hurt.
That is correct. It typically doesn't hurt. Now, in men, again, because the breast is a lot smaller, and if they do develop a lump, it can be very close to the pectoralis muscle, it's not uncommon for men to feel it because they bump into something.
Okay.
You know, they bump into something, and then it hits their muscle, and then they feel it a little bit. But yes, the cancer itself, still very, very rare for it to be painful.
Okay. Now, I've heard that catching breast cancer early, of course, is going to make a huge difference in treatment options. From a surgeon's perspective, how much does early detection actually change what's available to a patient?
Sure. Yes, early detection is good in many, many ways. I mean, the most important is it affects survival. Our survival rate for early stage breast cancer is something like 99% in 5 years. It's really pretty amazing. But you're also correct in that the treatment can oftentimes be less invasive and less severe. So number one, if the cancer is smaller, then you can have less surgery. You may not need a mastectomy.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Also, the other treatments like chemotherapy can also sometimes be avoided by catching it early.
All right. Great information. You're listening to Doctor's Own Call. Iqbal Garcha is our guest in the studio, and we're talking about breast cancer and screening. Give us a call at 404-872-0750. The Doctor's Own Call, sponsored by Northside Hospital, only on 95.5 WSB. And welcome back to the second half hour of Doctor's Own Call on 95.5 WSB, a weekly show dedicated to helping you live a healthier and happier life. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Today, we're so fortunate to have Iqbal Garcha. He is a board-certified general surgeon and fellow of the American College of Surgeons with decades of experience, and he practices with Surgical Specialists of Atlanta. That's part of the Northside Hospital family. He specializes in breast surgery, treating both benign and malignant diseases, as well as endocrine surgery. He's published extensively and given numerous presentations on surgical techniques. And he's taking your calls at 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. We've had some great conversations about breast cancer, early detection, how you get to that point. But Dr. Garcha, what if they get the other side of the coin?
Meaning they go in for their mammogram, something is found, they get a biopsy and get told that you have breast cancer.
You have breast cancer.
Yeah.
When that biopsy comes back positive, it can be an overwhelming moment that I want to know what the process looks like. How soon does a patient typically meet with a breast surgeon, and how quickly do things move?
So first of all, I'll say breast cancer as a group of cancers is not the fastest growing cancers out there. So minute by minute does not affect the overall prognosis.
Okay.
But of course, that's not a reason to move slowly.
Right.
It's a very traumatic phone call. It's a traumatic experience. Women are nervous. They want to know what to do. The first step for most women that get diagnosed with breast cancer is to see a breast surgeon. That's not always intuitive. A lot of people feel like they need to see an oncologist. And almost all breast cancer patients will eventually see an oncologist, but the breast surgeon is the first step. And it's the first step for a couple of reasons. Number one, surgery is usually the first step of treatment, not always. But seeing a breast surgeon is the right person to hear more about your diagnosis and to make a treatment plan and get other testing done if so. So that time period between getting the phone call and seeing a breast surgeon can be very traumatic and can be very worrisome. We try to make that as short as possible here at Northside Hospital. So we've instituted a program. It's been piloted, but it's going to go system-wide here very soon, where every single patient that gets that diagnosis gets a phone call from a human being that is very knowledgeable about breast cancer to A, answer some of their questions,
good,
B, reassure them that they're in the right place and things will get taken care of in a timely manner, and then C, start making appointments.
Oh, that's great. So they see, like yourself, a breast surgeon to remove the cancer.
That is correct. That's usually the first step. Removing the cancer provides two things. One, the cancer is removed from where it started, but breast surgery and removing the cancer is also an important part of staging. So most women don't get a true stage until the cancer's been removed.
Oh, okay.
Few exceptions to that, but that's the majority of people.
Then they see the oncologist to go about how we're going to do the chemo or the radiation or both, to make sure everything is gone.
Yeah, and maybe I'll say that in a slightly different way.
Okay.
So the goal of breast cancer treatment is to prevent a recurrence.
Okay.
That's the goal.
Okay.
And in breast cancer, there's two ways it can recur. There's what we call local recurrence, where it recurs on the breast itself, and then mm-hmm. there's a distant recurrence, where it recurs elsewhere in the body. Both have to be addressed. Surgery by itself does a great job at reducing the local recurrence, but does not have a real strong effect on preventing a distant recurrence. So that's where the medical oncologist comes into play to do something else other than surgery to keep it from coming back elsewhere in the body.
Okay. Now, Dr. Garcha, a lot of patients aren't sure why a surgeon is involved before treatment even begins. Can you explain that role of the breast surgeon early in the process and why that referral happens when it does?
That's right. So the treatment planning is very complicated. And we talked about surgeons and oncologists, but there's a lot of people involved in the breast cancer team. We already talked about navigators or breast cancer facilitators to help people get through the process. We also have social workers to help them with socioeconomic needs. We have physical therapists. We talked about that with the very first caller. We also have survivalist specialists for afterwards. So there's a lot of people, but the breast surgeon is the person that's knowledgeable of all the different people on the team and can make a determination. I said for most people, surgery is the first step, but in some people, chemotherapy is the first step. But a breast surgeon's knowledgeable on understanding how to identify those people and then get them connected with the other members of their breast cancer treatment team.
At Northside Hospital, is there one person who's the conductor that puts all this into place?
I wouldn't say there's one person, but we do have a team.
Okay.
We do have a team that helps patients or facilitates patients getting through all of it.
Because this is complicated.
It is super complicated. It's not complicated to me, and it's not complicated to our team that does this. But to patients, it's extremely complicated.
Yes.
And I think the days where patients got a phone call that says, you have breast cancer, call your primary care doctor, call your mom, call your neighbor, call, you know, those that's not good because it's too complicated for our patients and they shouldn't have to do that.
Right. I totally agree. At Northside Hospital, they have a multidisciplinary team approach to breast cancer, what we're talking about. What does that actually look like in the practice? Who is involved and how does that team structure benefit the patient?
So first of all, hopefully our patients don't hear that much about that. Okay?
Oh, so it's happening behind the scenes.
It generally happens
behind
the scenes.
Why worry them?
Yes, I mean, it because once again, using the word complicated isn't a reassuring word to people.
No.
Yeah. People want to hear this is easy. We got this, you know. But behind the scenes, you are correct. So we'll just talk about the doctors themselves, the medical oncologists, the surgeons, the radiation oncologists, the pathologists, the radiologists, everybody's very involved in each person's care. Every breast cancer is different.
Yes.
Every patient's different. And to try to treat everybody the same, that's what we did back in the 70s, was not nice to patients and actually didn't work very well. So for us, we discuss behind the scenes every single patient. Sometimes it's phone calls. We talk to each other. Sometimes it's in an organized conference. We have a breast cancer conference once a week at Northside.
Really?
Many big breast cancer centers do the same thing. It's called a multidisciplinary conference, to use your word.
Mm-hmm.
And every Monday morning, we have a Zoom call, and we present patients, human beings, and we discuss their individual cases. We have a radiologist that shows all their films. We have the pathologist that shows the slides. We have surgeons, oncologists, radiation oncologists. So a lot of women feel like, oh, well, I'd like to get a second opinion. Well, a lot of women are getting a second opinion, third, fourth, and they don't even know it.
Oh, I love that. I love that. The collaboration between the breast cancer surgeon and the medical oncologist is something patients often hear about. Why does that relationship matter, and how does that coordination shape the patient's treatment plan?
Well, the coordination shapes the patient's treatment plan just by what I said about the order of things.
Right.
Yeah. Do we do surgery first? Do we do chemo first? Sometimes people get endocrine therapy first. Do they need radiation? Do they not? So that for sure does. But also getting all those appointments and meeting with all those doctors, it's very time consuming. We do a great job at Northside Hospital of bringing care to the patient. We have a lot of satellite locations. They don't have to drive downtown every single time. Mm-hmm. But there is still some time that's required. So everybody getting together behind the scenes can help facilitate that to make their patients' lives a lot easier.
Now, let's talk about lumpectomy versus mastectomy. What's the difference?
So that's usually the very first discussion when a patient sees a breast surgeon, because surgery is oftentimes the very first thing. So both options are usually available to patients, and patients are involved in picking which one works best for them. The important thing to know is the pros and cons of two. Survival is not one of those factors.
Mm-hmm.
The survival rate for patients getting a lumpectomy is just as good as mastectomy. Patients sometimes say, I want whichever's better. Well, neither one's better from a survival standpoint.
Okay.
But they both have pros and cons. Breast conserving surgery, that's what we call lumpectomy. The idea is to take out just the cancer and leave the breast alone. So for a woman, being able to have her breast is a very important thing. And mm-hmm. when this was first invented many years ago, it made a really big difference for patients.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So if you got a mastectomy, you would need a breast reconstruction.
Well, we offer breast reconstruction to everybody that has a mastectomy. So if a patient needs a mastectomy, let's say the cancer's bigger or it's in different places mm-hmm. and a lumpectomy may not work. But if a patient chooses a mastectomy, even if she doesn't necessarily need one for survival, we want her to wake up with something that looks a lot like her breast.
Yes.
So the biggest, let's say, boon in that is what we call skin sparing and now even nipple sparing mastectomy, where the outside of the breast is preserved.
Oh.
And we just remove the breast tissue from the inside. And then that can be replaced either with the patient's own tissue or with an implant.
Folks, if you have a question for Dr. Garcia, give us a call. If you've gone through this procedure, if you're in the middle of these procedures with breast cancer or screening, give us a call, 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. One of the biggest concerns for patients is whether the cancer will come back. How do recurrent rates and survival outcomes compare between a lumpectomy and a mastectomy? Look into your crystal ball.
Yes, of course. No, that's a great question. So if anybody's been listening to this whole show, I'll dial back a few minutes ago where I talked about the two ways that cancer can recur. One's called a local recurrence that's in the breast, uh-huh. and the other is a distant recurrence, which is coming elsewhere. So it is important to know that for survival, the distant recurrence rate is the more important of the two. So between a lumpectomy and a mastectomy, the risk of a local recurrence, meaning the cancer coming back in the breast, is a little bit higher with a lumpectomy. It's not a high number, but it is higher than a mastectomy. So that can be kind of scary for women.
Right. Sure.
But we do try to reassure women that a local recurrence is still very curable. So a certain percentage, I don't want to give out exact numbers because every patient's different, but let's say 1 in 20 women that get a lumpectomy will eventually need a mastectomy because the cancer may come back in that breast. Now, that means 19 out of 20 won't, and they do just fine. But women that have a lumpectomy still need to be screened.
Okay.
So they still get mammograms and sometimes other modalities as well. And so for women that pick mastectomy over lumpectomy, that's not an uncommon reason, is I don't want to have to come back for more mammograms. I don't want to have to worry. So it's oftentimes more of a peace of mind thing rather than a real survival thing.
I hear that. All right. That music means we need to break. You're listening to Doctor's Own Call, only on 95.5 WSB. Welcome to the final segment of Doctor's Own Call, presented by 95.5 WSB and Northside Hospital. I want to thank Iqbal Garcia, who has been my physician from Northside Hospital. He's graciously given his morning to answer your calls about breast cancer and breast screening. We've had great information. We have a caller on the line. They're being screened right now. When they're ready, we'll put them on the air. And you can listen to this show every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, and we'll take your calls. Let's see if Dorothy is ready. Dorothy, you're on WSB. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. What's your question for Dr. Garcia?
Well, I'm a three-decade survivor of breast cancer. I've had three diagnoses of breast cancer, all very early, and I'm a big proponent of both self-exam and mammograms. So my question is about microcalcification. So I first had a lumpectomy, and then on a mammogram, they found some microcalcifications they didn't like the shape of, and I had a mastectomy, and then 20 years later, I had a lumpectomy on the other breast. But I'm wondering if treatment of microcalcifications that have a bad shape and look like they may become a tumor, I wonder if that technology has changed and treatment has changed for microcalcifications that show up on a mammogram.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So women probably hear that term, calcifications and microcalcifications, when they are talking about mammographies quite commonly. So before I answer your question, I do want to educate everybody that calcifications and calcium in the body can be very normal. And the vast majority of calcium deposits that are seen on mammography are completely benign. So just because you hear you have calcium or calcium deposits in the breast does not mean they have to be removed or that it requires a treatment. And it doesn't even necessarily mean that patient is at higher risk for getting breast cancer. But when the calcifications look abnormal, pleomorphic is one word, microcalcifications, clustered, those are the things that raise some suspicion. The real answer to your question is the calcifications themselves aren't harmful. The microcalcifications are a side effect of the small breast cancer cells dividing. So I will say our technology is better now as far as determining what's suspicious and what's not than when you went through all this. So I don't know. Maybe your question is, gosh, if I'd had a mastectomy to begin with, or if they'd been able to get more of the calcium deposits out, I wouldn't have had to go through this a second time or even a third time. I wouldn't say our technology is there as far as that goes, but we do have other options to evaluate microcalcifications to decide. Number one, catch them a little bit earlier with 3D mammography, and also to avoid maybe unnecessary biopsies. So I don't know that technology would have changed much in far as your case goes, but we are getting there.
Okay, good to know. I've thought about that. I mean, I don't have any regrets.
Yeah.
I'm still here.
Yes.
Happy to have survived and, you know, had really good care and post-surgical care and never had chemo. I had radiation, but I never had chemo for any of that because it was so early.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that's my message for other listeners that, you know, some people say, I don't want to get a mammogram. They might find something. And I say, that's exactly the point.
Exactly.
Would you like to survive?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's right. And I'm really glad to hear you say that because mammograms do get a little bit of a bad reputation with women. You know, the other thing, just to let all the listeners know, your particular case where your cancer was found by microcalcifications, mammography by far is the best test for calcium. The other imaging that women get, like ultrasounds and MRIs, they don't catch calcium like mammography does. So there really is no substitute for women that want to be more proactive about their screening. Doing additional or supplemental testing can be very beneficial, but there's really no way to substitute mammography. And in your particular case, without a mammogram, it would have been completely missed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Dorothy, thank you for your call, and God bless you and your journey that you've been on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. What a success story.
Yeah, we love hearing that. Sometimes women can be very discouraged. You know, she had to have surgery three times, but
she's still here, like she said.
That's right. And that's an important thing for women that are trying to decide between lumpectomy and a mastectomy. You're not compromising your care by choosing less surgery.
So what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
So get your mammograms. Everybody be proactive. Don't be scared. Also, every woman should know their risk. So most of the mammography places here will offer a survey to talk about your family history, to drill down exactly what your lifetime risk is. Northside Hospital has a high-risk clinic. But even our mammography units will offer to give people their personalized risk, and that's how best to decide when to start getting mammograms and what the right modalities are.
Excellent. Dr. Garcha, thank you so much for joining us on Doctors on Call.
Happy to be here, and thank you very much.
All right. You're listening to Doctors on Call, presented by Northside Hospital, only on 95.5 WSB.